listening to the Daily Gold Podcast, covering precious metals, the junior mining sector, and global capital markets for intelligent investors. Now, here is your host, Jordan Roy Byrne.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of the Daily Gold Podcast. Thank you so much for joining us today. With me is a brand new guest. I'm really excited to have him on. His name is Vince Lancey, and he is the founder of Echo Bay Partners. And, you know, in his past, he spent decades as a market maker on the floor of the NYMEX and COMEX, among other places. So we're talking with someone who really knows how the markets work, who's traded and managed big money, you could say. And he also writes The Gold Fix on Substack. Really excited to have him on. Vince, as we get started, let's talk about Zoltan Pozsar. And, you know, he's a Fed guy, and his current or recent writings, I should say, recent missives on what's going on. He's talked about gold a little bit. I know this Zero Hedge has been talking about it. I know that you have been talking about it. People on Twitter have been talking about it. But, you know, it seems to me, based on my research, that you've been analyzing and digesting what he's really saying much better than everybody else out there. So my first question for you would be, okay, first, tell us why we should care what he's saying. And then secondly, what is he saying, and how does that really pertain to things being really bullish for gold?
Okay. First of all, thanks for having me on. And we were talking about this earlier on, so I appreciate the comment that you made. And it's good to be here. Zoltan, okay, yeah, he has become like a little bit of a cottage industry in the financial world now. And Zero Hedge, they have a, you know, they find good analysts. I got to be honest, they find good analysts, and then they explain them to us so we can understand. At least that's, you know, I'm biased towards Zero Hedge. And then eventually, you know, most of them, I don't understand them at all. But this Zoltan character, who everyone seems to have many people seem to have a hard time understanding him. I kind of get him, which doesn't really say much for my thought process, because everyone else is just, everyone else that I read just befuddles me. So I'm kind of comfortable reading his type of stuff. But with regards to the markets, right, he's not to make this about him, but he's a plumber, right? So by plumbers, you and I, we have houses, you know, the sink gets clogged on the third floor, and on the first floor, water comes out of the sink on the first floor. And so we're just like, okay, there's a clog, there's a problem. This guy, because of his Fed experience, can tell you which intersection behind the wall is the most likely problem that caused the flooding downstairs. And so that's why he's referred to by several people as a plumber. And so because of that, he'll talk about stuff that, for the most part, we don't care about. I mean, you may care about it to read it, but you're not going to care about it to preserve your wealth or to grow your net worth. He'll talk about things like at the intersection of where the collateral meets the future, you have a problem with the handoff, and therefore you're going to have a spike in prices, stuff like that. And you have to read it three or four times. But there are two things that he's written about a lot recently, one of which was about gold, and that was about his Bretton Woods 3 concept. And the other is about the current state of the economy and markets, and they are related. And as a gold and silver person, I pay close attention to what Fed guys do not say about gold, because they're just not really that permitted to talk about it. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. So I guess to follow up with that, I mean, because people have been talking about how he supposedly is bullish on gold, or he thinks it's going to do really well in the era that we're moving into. I mean, could you explain? I mean, I was reading
of what he was saying.
This is
what we talked about.
I didn't read it four times. I only read it twice. So that's why I'm asking you.
Okay, I guess my next job will be as a Zoltan whisperer if I get lucky. Otherwise, nobody else is going to hire me to do anything else. If that's all I can do. About, I don't know, 2 months ago, he wrote a piece called Bretton Woods 3, which was a nice little euphemism for he was saying that he was opining. Now, mind, he's not stating it like it's going to happen. He was saying that he thinks that with the advent of with the problem with supply chains and the problem with and the sanctions and the war, all three of those things underlined a major problem that we have. And that is, and it goes back to the fact that in the United States, we don't make many things anymore, which means if you have inflationary pressures and you raise interest rates in the past, when we made stuff here, more so, I'm not trying to, cry panic, but I'm saying, we don't make cars here, but we used to make cars here. We made cars here. If the Fed raised interest rates, that would slow down the demand for stuff, for goods, for cars. But now, because most of our material things are bought from overseas, specifically China, our raw materials like palladium, some gold and natural gas and what have you comes from Russia or Europe or South Africa. Because we're so dependent on external sources for raw and finished goods, there's a problem. And it's kind of like the people with the money dictate policy. So we were buyers, and China, just sticking with China because it's easier, China needed our money more than we needed their goods. So we bought. And we said either you lower the price or we're not going to buy. Or, the supply chains also helped in that as well. Now, with the advent of the COVID crisis and the Russian invasion and the sanctions, it's kind of like the tables are turned. So Polzar was saying that the people with the raw materials, in this case, we'll just say oil. No, we have oil too. Let's use something that's a little bit less. Steel. How's that? Steel was made overseas. If we want to buy steel, we have to buy it from, I'll just make it up, China. And we use that steel to build things over here. And if that's unavailable to us, well, the West, the United States and the West in general, has a very large financial infrastructure built on top of that piece of steel. There's steel, there's the girders that are built for the house, there's the mortgage that's released on the house, there's the futures and bonds that go in, and you have one of those, what was the name of it? I can't believe I can't remember, but you said it to me offline. The inverted pyramid?
Oh, the Exeter's pyramid.
Right, the Exeter's pyramid. So everything that we do now is, and I'm not trying to be cynical, is financial engineering on top of the real thing. Well, the real thing is over there. So what Polzar was getting at, now that I've gotten all of the way, was he's saying the guys with the actual collateral are demanding higher prices for their collateral. So all these little things that you've created on top of their steel, well, that's going to collapse unless you have access to their collateral. So he was saying that the world had gotten too imbalanced. Financials are in the West and physicals are in the East. So we're a futures exchange and they're a spot exchange. And he was saying that because there's too much of our economy built on top of their bottom of the Exeter pyramid and they're not getting paid enough, then there's kind of a strike going on, COVID or Russia. And the result is he was coming up with a solution saying we need balance. And that balance would come from having a new type of currency world where physical commodities have a bigger weighting. So that would amount to a basket of commodities, natural gas, energy being in a basket, being in a currency type of swap basket, almost like a bartering thing. And he said gold. Now, that's a no-no. Like, Fed people don't say the word gold, especially not in a positive light. And what he said was, in that report, was, in this future world I envision, physical commodities will have a bigger place at the table. And I imagine gold, and if it survives, that's what he said, if it survives, Bitcoin will be worth more, period. That's what he said. And he said the quiet part out loud. And I think a lot of people, a lot of gold bugs, you know, people like myself, I started paying attention more to what he said, and I started reading all of his work, and he never mentioned gold again. But he did mention that one time, and he has a habit of, on occasion, saying the quiet part out loud, and I've been parsing his words ever since. So yes, he's bullish on gold. Does that mean he thinks it's going up? No, because if you read his subsequent works, he thinks that everything else is going down. So hopefully that answers the big Zoltan is bullish on gold question.
That was great. It definitely answers it. Now, so enough about Zoltan's opinions. Let's get your opinions. Okay, I guess one quick question for you. How many more interest rate hikes do you think the Fed is going to be able to do?
Oh, okay. I used to really specialize in this type of shit, you know, paying attention to macro, but I don't anymore. But I'll say this. I'll give you both sides of the coin. One side of the coin is, if you believe, as I do, that the Fed is on a mission, a serious, serious mission to try and control inflation, but can't do it because we don't have the commodities to control it anymore, going back to that Exeter's pyramid, then what they want to do is they want to crush demand for things like houses and stocks. So if you believe, and I'm going to answer your question directly, if you believe that the Fed needs to get inflation under control and that they are not betting on the supply side to heal itself anytime soon, they will raise rates as high as to get real rates at 3.5% to 4%. Now, that's the extreme. The but is, but they won't raise them that much if stocks get to a low enough level that people deleverage and people start going back to work. It's crazy. I mean, everyone's working, but I'm kind of throwing a lot of things out there. But to keep it simple and straightforward, the Fed, if the market does nothing, and the market isn't doing nothing, but let's assume the market does nothing, the Fed has no problem getting interest rates, real interest rates, at 3.5% to 4%. Now, the basis for that is quantified. If you look at previous inflationary problems, not just the 70s, right, but the 70s, one in the 80s, in 99 we had one, which is before the crash, there is a terminal rate, and that is the rate that the Fed goes to before they stop hiking. And people talk about what the hike rate is, but it seems to be anywhere between 2 and 6% real rates. So using what the lower end of it, my answer is 3.5% based on 6% was back in the 80s. You know, 1999 was 2.7%, I believe. Don't quote me on that. So I think that they will want to get it to like 2.7%. But they will overdo it and get it to 3.5% to 4%. That's what I think will happen. What doesn't make that happen? Stuff like what happened today, which is kind of what Zoltan was talking about. If stocks crap out enough, fast enough, then the Fed will go from having to raise to not having to raise at all. It's really kind of a wicked bifurcation. You know, going back to zero hedge again, one of the running gags that they have now is, if the Fed seems to think that crushing stock prices will get inflation under control, what will inflation be if stocks are at zero? And, you know, that's a joke. You know, getting our stock prices to zero is not going to make Russian sanctions go away. So to answer your question, real rates, 3.5% to 4%, and that would be 7 to 9 50 basis point hikes. But now coming out of the spreadsheet mindset, look, if the stock market goes below a certain price, either the Fed's going to lower rates or they're going to delay QT. So there's a price in the stock market. We don't know what it is yet. Maybe it's 2,500 in the S&P. They don't care, in my opinion, if we get to 2,500. They care if we get there too fast. So while the Fed is letting the markets be more volatile now, there is a price where they will stop their rate hiking. And we're not there yet. So I'd have to think that June and July, you're going to be 50 basis points and 50 basis points. And if stocks get back above, say, 4,400 in the S&P, then you're going to see 75 basis points or 100 basis points. All in, 3.5% is where I think we have to go in their mind right now, unless we crash. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. So 3.5%. What about the bond market? And I mean, in that scenario, if we get a reflex rally or a good rebound or even a bear market rally that lasts for several months, I mean, that's going to be able to help them raise more for sure. But what if the 10-year yield, which is at, I don't know, 2.75 now or 2.8, wherever it is.
Right.
I mean, what if that dumps down to the low twos? I mean, they're
oh, that's
are,
a big...
are they going to super invert the curve?
That is a really good question. You know, and I'm sure everyone. Oh, that's a really good question. But it really is a good question because I was thinking about that. See, here's what the – I'm glad you asked that because I'm thinking out loud now. I don't have an answer. I have an answer that we're going to have to think out loud on here. The Fed – if the Fed – and this is kind of Zoltan stuff, but it's the truth. The Fed wants – assuming that what I'm saying is true, the Fed wants long-term rates higher. In getting long-term rates higher, it will keep stocks down as a competitor – reduce housing prices because mortgage rates will go up, and it'll eventually allow them to raise short-term rates if they have to without making the yield curve get inverted. Okay, so that's where I was coming into this conversation with you. And now you're saying, which by the way is what happened today, if stocks crap out, you're not saying this, but indirectly, implicitly, if stocks crap out, then people will put money out of stocks and into bonds. And therefore, bond rates will drop again as they are again. And won't that kind of mess things up for the Fed? And the answer is, yeah, that's a big problem for them. Because if stocks drop too fast, and this is about the whole raising rates thing, if stocks drop too fast, then they can't raise rates. But if they don't raise rates, then the bond market will do too well. And if the bond market does too well as a flight to safety, then how are they going to get what they want to get accomplished? So the answer, Jordan, is I don't know. It's a real nightmare for them. It might have to be QT. Maybe they'll say, okay, we're not going to raise rates, but we're going to sell more bonds in the open market and unwind our balance sheet faster. That's all I got. I mean, what do you think?
So you're saying they would sell long-term bonds to keep those yields higher?
Yes, while they would counterbalance. Yeah. In a sentence, thank you for pointing me in that direction. Otherwise, I go down a rabbit hole. If the Fed wants to raise interest rates to keep stock prices level, and part of that is they want to also have interest rates at the bond market higher to also dissuade people from buying stocks, then – if people are rolling their money out of stocks into bonds, what are they going to do? Well, they can't raise rates because it'll crash the stock market if that happens. What they will have to do is shift towards a more quantitative tightening, the opposite of quantitative easing, which means all those bonds they were buying during COVID, they're going to have to start releasing them into the market more. And hopefully people, let's say you and me, we have our money in stocks. It's like, oh, God, stocks are going down. We put our money in bonds. And we'll put it in gold, too. But we'll put our money in bonds. And the Fed's like, well, if two people are putting their money in bonds, we're just going to release more bonds into the market, unwind our balance sheet, and drive those interest rates back up. So, yeah, that's what they're going to do. That's the answer.
So Let's talk about how this impacts gold, because if the Fed can actually get to 3.5%, I mean, that's not going to be, that would be pretty negative for precious metals, in my opinion. I mean, what is the catalyst for gold moving up and, you know, breaking out of this cup and handle pattern? Is it, you know, further downside in the stock market? Is it the bond market? You know, is it the 10-year really rallying? Is it all this stuff happening and the Fed has to stop hiking? I mean, or is it something else? How do you see?
To your first point about real rates going up is not very good for metals. Yeah, there's no argument there. And it plays out like this. If the Fed does everything perfectly properly, we know they won't, but if they do everything perfectly properly, then real rates will get positive really quickly. And if real rates get positive really quickly, that's not bullish for real assets. So, you know, for all the reasons that everybody understands macro, you know, interest rates go up, real interest rates are positive, then inflation is getting squashed, and gold, the opportunity cost of gold becomes real. Fine. So what makes real rates going up, but at the same time not killing gold? And the answer is, and I haven't, we're not seeing it yet, but we could see it, is the answer is what happened in the 70s. The answer is when you have a Federal Reserve that is interested in chasing inflation and it never really overtakes inflation, expecting inflation to kind of back off. So this is what happened in the 70s and the very early 80s. Inflation is 6%. And I'm making numbers up. These aren't real numbers. Inflation is 6%. We're going to raise Fed funds to 5%. So real rates are negative 1, right? Inflation is 7%. We'll raise Fed funds to 6%. So real rates are still negative 1. So the reason gold in the end finally exploded was, in my opinion, two reasons. One, the loss of confidence in the Fed to overtake inflation for fear of triggering a recession. They kept chasing it higher. Real rates stayed negative all the way up. And we all know that was also part of them debasing the dollar to make their debt less expensive. But at some point, the marketplace said, this is ridiculous. You guys are never going to overtake inflation. You'll be minus 1% forever. Your intent is not there. I give up. I'm just buying gold. And the volatility killed investors, so they put their money into gold. The second reason that gold went up, even as real rates went up, is because, and this is a matter of investment cycles, and it's my opinion, it's based on empirical data, but I haven't seen enough cycles in gold to be confident of it. And that is this. There was an old joke, you know, when you're on the floor, when inflation would come out, you know, high and gold would do nothing. And the older guys would look at me and say, I'm like, why isn't gold up? And they'd say, well, it's because you can't eat gold. And I'd be like, well, you can sell it to buy stuff to eat. He's like, well, you're going to walk into a deli and say, give me a ham and cheese sandwich with a gold coin? No, you're not going to do that. You're going to sell your gold. And that's what people are doing. They're selling their gold to buy dollars to buy that ham and cheese sandwich. And so I would laugh and, you know, but there's a lot of truth to this. And the truth is that inflation starts at grassroots things like food, right? Or, you know, toilet paper, let's just say. And it happens in cycles. Little things happen in bubbles. You know, the price gets up and then it goes back. But if it sticks and it never gets back to normal, and then people start getting raises and the Fed starts chasing inflation, gold is, more than anything, in my opinion, a comment on trust in the policies of the people in charge. So if they have to get real rates at 3.5%, and let's just say that everybody in the world agrees with me on that. If they have to get real rates at 3.5%, to the extent that they do not toe the line and move it up to that in an orderly fashion, gold goes up. So gold is going to react to how slow or how reticent the Fed is to do their job, just like they did in the 70s. they were slow in there, and it's like, okay, I'm buying gold, I'm buying food, and eventually it was like, I have enough gold, I mean, I have enough food, I have enough heating oil for the winter, what am I going to do with all this extra money they're giving me? Shit, I'm not going to put it in stocks, I'll put it in gold. And that's what happened. So to answer the question is, gold will rally in the late stages of inflation when the marketplace feels the Fed is not doing their job. And right now, the Fed is doing its job. I'm not happy about that. I mean, I'm happy about it, but I'm not happy about it. The Fed is doing its job, and gold will remain vigilant, but not bubbly. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. So you're saying that essentially inflation becomes the Fed, they can't get inflation under control for whatever reason, and then inflation becomes embedded, basically.
Yes. Yes.
And so I think that in addition to that, if you throw in a recession, that would, you know, probably be assumingly, you know, really good for gold, which, you know, maybe we get into, I mean, that's my personal opinion. Maybe later this year we get into that where maybe the rate of inflation comes down, but you still have 4 or 5% inflation, you're in a recession. What the hell is the Fed going to do when rates are at, you know, what are they going to be at? 2.5% at that point in time? I mean, at that point, maybe, I mean, is that the type of picture that you think would be possible and really bullish for gold?
That's actually my scenario. My best worst case scenario. Just to parrot what you said, because it was spot on. It sounds like I'm really stroking you here, but it's the truth. I mean, you know what you're talking about. If assets get too low, look, it's a race to the bottom, right? The Fed is raising rates to get inflation under control, and they're going to damage assets, stocks, right? Stocks. When I say assets, think stocks and homes. And they're going to do that. And then at some point, either stocks will get too low and they'll have to put on the brakes and say, okay, inflation's down. It's only 4%, but stocks are cratering. We have to back off, which is one scenario that you painted. Another scenario is, you know, stocks aren't down, but inflation is at a point where we're comfortable with it and we think we can handle it from here. So let's say stocks stabilize here, but inflation keeps coming down. But now let's say 2 or 3%. And now the Fed's like, it's not embedded. We have it under control. In both scenarios, the Fed is saying inflation is manageable by us now. And there's the hubris, arrogance that happened exactly in the 70s. So they got inflation to come in and be under control a bit, and they took their foot off the brake too fast, and it became, as you say, embedded. And they don't use the word embedded. Well, they have used it, but the phrase they're using now is wage. Let's look for this phrase, wage price spiral. And what they're really saying is, inflation gets up and stays up, and people get unhappy, and they either quit their jobs and go on the equivalent of food stamps, EBT cards, or they get raises. And when they get more money, they spend on more goods, and that's the embedding. They describe embedding as wage price spiral, which, as we all know, is a bunch of crap right now because real rates are low and real buying power is actually decreased. And I'm not even being hyperbolic about it. So that is the fantasy. In fact, I have a chart I put in a post. I'll send you the chart if you want to give it to your people. But it's a chart of the 1970s and 1980-81 inflation, and it shows the inflation went up. It's exactly what you said. The inflation went up to whatever, 8%, and then it went down to like 5%. But unemployment went up, and so they reacted to the unemployment. And inflation, it was like a Twin Peaks thing. So you had it in the mid-70s, and then it just spiked even higher in the 80s. So to just underline what you're saying, this is probably a multi-year problem. And you know that at least once they're going to think they have it under control, and they're not. So which brings us to what you alluded to, stagflation. A recession is bullish for gold. That's what you implied. And historically, QE should have been, we thought, would be way more bullish for gold than it was, but it wasn't because of something called sanitized monetary printing, which basically means they printed all this extra money out, but they didn't let the banks spend it on anything but stocks. That's a simple way of saying it. But this time, to your point, if they have to lower rates again, I don't think they're going to be able to lock that money up this time. I think that QT is bullish for gold as long as the Fed atrociously lags real rates. And QE, if they do it too soon, which is what you're saying could happen, if they do it again too soon or back off the break too soon, is just going to let gold rotate higher from 1850, not from 1650. And so from a pricing point of view, everything that's happening in the last 3 years may not necessarily have raised the ceiling on gold, but it has raised the floor. And that's where we are. I agree with you.
Okay, so let's wrap up with this. So, but it sounds like these, I mean, obviously markets discount the anticipate, but it sounds like these, because I'm trying to get precise on the timing, which I know is extremely difficult, but
yeah,
I mean, this stuff sounds like it's further away than the next couple of months. I mean, gold, it's technically iffy to me at this point in time. So, I mean, if the Fed can get off a couple more 50-point hikes here, and you know, maybe they're able to hike again in September. I mean, that would be negative for gold, it seems, as long as shit's not breaking while they do that.
Yeah. I mean, you're thinking out loud, and I agree with you. So I would just almost literally restate what you said, because it needs to be said that way, assuming nothing else changes, the Fed is going to risk 2 percentage points of unemployment to get 4 percentage points of inflation down. And in doing so, they will risk another X amount of points off of stocks. The problem with the timing, and this is why I think it's very, and I'm not saying that you're predicting timing. The problem with the timing is this. If the Fed says things are going well, we're not going to raise rates, we're getting what we want out of it, and then the Russian-Ukrainian war ends, stocks are going to moon, right?
Well, depending on from what level that they're at.
Well, there you go, and that's and so that's the problem. You know, if what I'm getting at is if the Fed raises rates in a methodical way and the market reacts lower, they will back off. But there's an overnight risk of, I don't know how it would happen, but peace breaking out. And then you could have stocks rally, you know, the Dow rally 2,000 points. And then the Fed's going to have to put a cap on that right away. So in my mind, with the increase and with the emphasis on the Exeter pyramid, right, even though gold's capped by government behavior, and I'm not saying that in a paranoid way, I'm just saying that's you know, people are dissuaded from owning gold. Between that and the end of Basel III, which reduces speculative froth in gold, which makes it actually go higher because there's less idiots who have to get stopped out on the way down. And you factor in that the Fed is hiking rates into a recession. The cycles are not lined up anymore. So stagflation is there. Jordan, stagflation is their best case scenario, right?
Yes.
I mean, that's what they – I don't know how else they're going to handle it. But, you know, we need to be in stagflation, unfortunately.
So, I mean, wrapping up, it just seems that there's not a good outcome here, and because of that, whatever happens, I don't mean to sound like a gold permabull, but you know, whatever is likely to happen or has a realistic chance of happening on all sides, it seems that it's going to be bullish for gold.
Yes. The ceiling may not be raised, but the floor is definitely raised, because there are fewer and fewer scenarios, as you're basically saying, where gold goes down. And, you know, stagflation is bullish for gold relative to stocks. Inflation is bullish for gold. QE, because of recession too early, brings back that inflation. That's bullish for gold. Properly, perfectly handled rate hikes, bearish for gold. If they get real rates, look, if they get real rates of 3.5% overnight like that, gold's going down. But guess what's going down more? Stocks. So from a flow point of view, I want to add this. And I really feel this strongly. The United States investment community is starting to slowly, it's a rolling panic. They're not getting bailed out. There's a generation of people who are going to be slow to figure out that the Fed can let stocks go down. And as they start coming along, probably demographically, the 80-year-olds, then the 75-year-olds, and getting younger and younger, you're going to see people just say, I can't take this anymore. I don't care if it's stagflation. I don't care if it's recession. I don't care if it's inflation. I just want to have a little bit more money in gold. And you know what? My house, Jordan, it's no longer a piggy bank. I can't take a home equity loan out. I can't take a second mortgage. Rates are up. They're calling my loans in. Just take 10% of my money out of stocks and put it into gold. I need to breathe. And there are every scenario that's legitimate in my mind is stable to bullish for gold, although I don't think you'll ever see it scream higher because there's too many people that would lose their jobs. The thing that makes gold go $100 lower overnight is peace in Europe, because then it'll be all bets off and it'll probably be a massive buy then. That's how I feel about it. I agree with you.
So just a final question. So, I mean, the floor has been raised. I mean, what I know it's hard to give definitive answers, but I mean, what's the floor? Is it 1750, 1700? Is it 1675?
I'm not good at this, but I am comfortable talking about it from a macro perspective, not from a really fundamental perspective. I would say that if you were to look at a chart, right? I'm not a technician, but I know that you know this stuff. If you were to look at a chart and try and overlay how gold behaved, put it this way, what was gold's trading range between 2018 and 2022, 2021, and now what's gold's trading range between 2021 and the future? I would say that whatever the price was in, say, 2020 on average, ignoring the whole COVID wipeout, let's say that was, say, 1650, 1700, I think that the floor in gold is higher by $100. So if we were to get under 1750, I would be a naked buyer with anything that I could put my money, anything I could use that was not a part of my next 90 days cash flow. The floor, I think, has been raised by a quantifiable amount that I haven't quantified yet. The quantifiable amount is basically how much – here's like a puzzle, right? When the speculative funds liquidate because gold's going down, they can't handle it anymore, how much do they drive gold lower in a quarter? $50? $100? That's how much the floor has been raised, because you don't have as much naked speculation because of Basel III, because the Fed's tightening, and because funds are putting their money in like other crazy things like meme stocks. So if all the funds in the world were to puke gold 3 years ago, they would drive it down $100. Now, I don't think they drive it down more than 50. So I'm going to say the floor is now between 1725 and 1775. And the floor used to be $50 lower than that easily. So there's $50 to $100 lower we were in the past. I mean, that's a long-winded way of saying I don't know. But you get my point. Like, the market's change is evolving.
Okay, on that note, Vince, before I let you go, can you tell our listeners where they can find you? I know you're non-promotional, but for our listeners who would like to follow your work and follow you on Twitter, maybe you could share with them how they can do so.
Sure, sure. On Twitter, I'm VLancy Pictures, like taking a picture. And that Twitter feed is, if you're like a normal human being, the Twitter feed is definitely an acquired taste. There's some macro comments and some market comments, but there's also some other stuff there. I think if this sort of stuff sort of interests you, I would encourage you to go to Goldstack, listen to me, Goldfix on Substack, and just subscribe to get a free subscription there. And if you like it, stick with it. But that's where you're going to get the actual conversations that I'm having with people like yourself. Twitter is just me having fun, but that's pretty much where I am. Goldfix, Substack, and if people are interested, we'll help them out a little bit.
Okay, great, Vince. Thank you so much. Real pleasure to have you on, and hopefully we can do this again in the next couple of months.
Sure, sure. Oh, yeah. One other thing. Thank you very much. A lot of my stuff gets posted on Zero Hedge in the contributor article, so you can always just read it there. You can find it there. I'm there somewhere usually. Thank you very much, Jordan.
Thank you for tuning into the Daily Gold Podcast. For more interviews, editorials, and analysis, log on to thedailygold.com. And for premium coverage of precious metals and the best junior mining companies, visit thedailygold.com/premium.